Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Has a casino moved into your house? The ease of retail investing may have unwittingly led to many opening ourselves to gambling rather than investing when it comes to the stock market. One of the world's most famous investors, Warren Buffett, in his annual letter to Berkshire Hathaway investors, has compared today's stock market to a casino. He says investors are buying and selling rapidly in the hopes of winning big. And he implores investors to resist the quote-unquote foolishness. Tim Phillips is founder of TimTalksMoney.com. How are you, Tim? Good morning.
I'm good, Michelle. I'm looking forward to chatting long-term investing with you.
All right. So, you know, there's such a real impulse for quick fixes when there is a lack of money. But we've also seen so much volatility in the stock market, making things difficult to predict. Some say largely driven by retail investors. So let's get your overview. What were you thinking when you first picked up that article by Berkshire Hathaway's head, Warren Buffett?
Well, I think it's more just a reflection of how the stock market has evolved over time. If you think about when he started investing in the 1930s or 40s or whatever it was, think about the frictions that were involved with investing, right? And it wasn't really a matter of trading. It was more you've got to make a call to your broker, you've got to place a trade, you've got to wait however many days for that trade to actually be settled. So it's a reflection of how fast markets move today. I guess it's his opinion. That's a bad thing. I think it's everyone's own personal opinion of what it's like. But it definitely does encourage more reckless behavior in terms of trading. If you think about how fast you can actually settle a trade now and how fast you can sort of, you know, put in trades on options or futures or whatever type of derivatives as well, you can actually take a lot of different types of, I mean, quote unquote, bets on the market that you wouldn't have been able to have done maybe sort of 50 or 60 years ago. Added to that, you also have leverage, obviously. And so it's kind of reflected in the data as well. If you actually see if the average holding period of a stock or the average investor, how long do they hold a stock on average today? It's around 10 months. And in the 1970s, it was around 5 years. And if you go back even further to the 40s, it was around 8 or 9 years for the average holding period of a stock. So I think it's encouraged people because you've got zero commissions, you know, sort of T plus two is now moving to T plus one in the US. So they're working on doing that in T plus one. So it's really quick now to markets are moving so fast, and you have all these sort of quants, and you have all this, these algorithms that are trading constantly, right, in milliseconds. So I think it's really a reflection, as I said, of how fast the market has moved, and also of really how the market is geared more towards capital returns, at least in the US, versus maybe dividends and income streams were more the primary way of making money in the 40s, 50s, 60s. And now that's really changed towards capital gains. And you're seeing that come through with the rise of the Magnificent Seven, and you had the FANGs in the 2010s. And so it depends on what type of investor you are, but in terms of actually making it easy to hold a stock or hold an ETF, it's becoming increasingly hard because you get a lot of data, you get a lot of information that encourages you to trade. And it's really easy now. I think that's the key. It's easy, and that makes it a lot more tempting.
Well said. In a way, I found it interesting. I looked up Warren Buffett when he first started investing, and he started at the age of 11. And when you look at his story, in many ways, it mimics what a lot of new retail investors go through when they're trying to understand investing. Warren Buffett would go to the library, read every book on investing in Omaha, the library, some of them twice, and then bought his first stock at age 11.
He's an exception.
So he, of all people, should understand how retail investors are trying to find their way around the market. And sometimes this foolishness associated with buying and selling is part of the learning cycle. It's one way to look at it. But, you know, when that becomes your entire approach to the stock market, I think that's when, you know, we have something to talk about. All right. So let's look at risk and choice, which is what investing and gambling both sort of revolve around, all fueled by hopes of future profit. So
Yeah.
Is it ever more important in this day and age to sort of ask yourself, okay, am I investing or gambling here?
Yeah, I think it's worth asking that question every time you put money into a stock. I think there's a really big, important difference between investing in the market at large, which is in maybe an ETF, or you're investing in the S&P 500, or you know the MSCI World or World, which invests across thousands and thousands of companies. And over time, the data has always said that markets will rise over the long term. So I think that's a key difference to understanding putting your money into the market, which over time, historically and data-driven wise, you will make money, versus a stock, which is very, very different, right? It's an individual company. There's a lot of concentration risk. You really have to understand the risks of buying into those, one of those stocks. I mean, you could have bought bought Blockbuster stock back in, I don't know, in the 90s and held and thought this is a great long-term investment. And then you could have bought Nvidia in the 2000s and look where you'd be today. So there are lots of different iterations. I think a lot of it can come down to your luck, right? Bought the right thing. You've held it. You've decided to hold it long enough to stop. But understanding the business, I think what Buffett was going back to is that if you don't understand it, then you shouldn't really be buying the business. And I think that's one reason why he stayed out of tech. I mean, a lot of people call him a boomer, didn't understand this, didn't understand that. Mm. I can respect that. I can understand that, because if you don't understand the business, you don't understand where the cash flows are coming from, you can't project where they're going to be making money in the future, then it might not be the best idea to invest into that stock. But having said that, he did buy in Apple because it's more of a consumer brand which he relates to and understands.
Yeah.
And now he's got however many billion in Apple stock, which is a large part now of the Berkshire portfolio. So I think it's important to recognize that the longer you're in the market, you will make money, right? I mean, there's the data to back that up. I think BlackRock did a study a few years ago looking at returns from 1926 to 2019. And if you stayed invested in the market or the S&P 500 for 1 month, you had a 62% chance of making money. So it's really like two-thirds, maybe less than two-thirds. If you did 1 day, it was pretty much a coin toss. I think it was like 50-50. If you stretch that out to 1 year, you have 75% chance. If you stretch that out to 5 years, you have an 89% chance. And if you hold for 10 years, you have 95% chance. Anything above 15 years, it's 99.8%. So you're pretty much guaranteed to make money if you have a holding period in the market of at least 15 years. But that's not related. I mean, that doesn't appeal to a lot of people nowadays, because everything is so instant. You want instant gratification. You want those gains to come now.
You want to have bought Bitcoin at $50.
Yeah. Bitcoin at $50 and then now it's to the moon at sort of whatever, 70,000. But in a way, it's really quite boring investing, long-term investing, which is why it doesn't really get the attention it deserves, maybe from the industry and from investors, because it's not really that sexy. Pretty boring.
I want to query that point of, you know, you have to understand and know what you're investing in before you get stuck, before you invest, you know, as a rule of thumb.
Yeah.
You know, Tim, things are so opaque. Sometimes you look at you wonder if any investor really has all the information to truly understand a company when it comes to the world of investing. I mean, we talk about it as if it's achievable even.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, there is understanding at a basic level of what makes a company good, and then there's really having all the information to make that call.
Yeah, that's also true. But to be fair, this is also an evolution of the market, which I think has really been on the side of the retail investor, you know, the average person on the street like me and you. I think it's really benefited those investors that have instant filings, you know, lots of information sources, the internet, which is basically exploded and democratized access to company filings, to company data, to real-time data. And so this is something that maybe you think hedge funds might have an edge in, because they have real-time data on, I don't know, consumer spending in certain parts of the US at whatever time of day. But I think over the longer term, that might give you an edge on the short-term movements of the market, perhaps. But if you're really sticking to the long term and you're focusing on the business, you've had maybe an explosion of, say, 10 times the data now than you would have had 10 or 20 years ago, just because of what is being required from companies to submit, and also the internet. So nowadays you can go and find out anything you'd want to on a large company in the US, and you can research that online and find different various sources to help you make an informed decision. Whereas back in the day, I remember Warren Buffett was saying that if you wanted to buy a stock or if you thought it was undervalued, you'd have to go to that little town that the company was headquartered in, understand how much money it was making, really understand the business, and be physically there on the ground. Whereas nowadays, you don't really need to do that, which is why I think some of the biggest, I mean, the world's biggest businesses are in the US. And even though they might not be household names, some of the companies in Asia or in Europe, they're well known because they have, you know, they've been really promoted globally in terms of their profile, in terms of their performance, how well they've done, perhaps their capital allocation, what they've returned to investors in dividends and buybacks. And so I think it's difficult to say that the retail investor is being in a way, because we have the information, but there's always going to be that big guy hedge fund institution against little guy mentality of thinking, oh, we need to, you know, we're being left out of the game. But I think the game is not really, we're not playing the same game. We're playing the long-term game. If you're thinking about your retirement savings or investing for the long-term, whereas these guys are playing a different game. They're playing the short-term trading game. They're playing movements on the market over the next day or the next week. Yeah. Whereas I think for most investors that are looking to put their savings to work, you should be thinking about investing stuff that you don't need in the next 5 years, right? Anything over the next 5 years, you should have, if you think you're going to be spending that money, you should have in cash instruments or cash-like instruments like money market funds, T-bills, Singapore savings bonds, instruments like that, which you know are risk-free effectively. But if you're thinking of generating a return over 5, 10, 15, 20 years, then you really need to put that into the market, into stocks you believe in, and understand the risks you're taking, but be patient as well, because I think the whole trading in and out of the market mentality really does erode your long-term returns. I think there's some other data that I pulled out from looking at, you know, the performance of the S&P from over the past, say, century, and just looking 120 years and just missing being invested. If you'd invested $1,000 in 1900, I know most of us aren't going to be doing 120 years of investing, but it's a good way of illustrating how much you can grow, right? I mean, think about staying invested for 120 years, you would have grown that $1,000 to over $26,000, right? So it's a 26x return. But if you'd missed, say, the 25 biggest days in that period, just 25, if you were out of the market for those 25 single days, your return is basically half. So you would have annualized 10.76% over that period if you stayed invested. And if you missed those 25 best days, you would have got 5.55%. So it's really an illustration of don't get scared don't be scared into action from the news headlines and what's happening, because some of the best days in the market, if you're not in it, they can happen during bear markets, right? And so that doesn't mean you should be selling everything as soon as the market drops, or if there's a crazy pullback in the market of 10-15%, that doesn't mean you should be selling and leaving the market. You should really just be staying and continuing to invest and stay invested as well. But it's important, again, it's an important distinction between the market and a company. So understanding the company when you invest, understanding the single stock risk that you take is an important distinction.
You know, when I was back in the old days in university, we would discuss post-truth, and it seemed like such a weird alien idea that there could be a world where we were debating what's true and what's not. True. And here we are in this world debating if what we read on Reddit we can believe, and we have Reddit itself saying in its IPO that, hey guys, what you read on our pages at Wall Street Bets could actually wreak havoc on the stock prices of these things that we're talking about, and there's little that we can do about it here on Reddit, but please buy our stock when we IPO. So anyway, the whole point is the last 100 years may not be indicative of the next 100 years in terms of how stock markets perform. But there is one thing that I wanted to pick up on this article, back to Warren Buffett. He says, you know, when it comes to making smart investment decisions, don't listen to the pundits. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think he has a very good point. I mean, if you're always trying to prognosticate on where the market is going over the next week the next month, you know, the next year. It's really just a coin toss, right? We say this because we need to be talking about it. We need to be out there saying happen and that's going to happen. And we have a whole industry built on this in Singapore and in Hong Kong and in wherever else in the world, the financial services industry. So I think it's important to take what a lot of pundits say with a grain or a bucket of salt, as Warren Buffett says, and just make your own informed decisions. And don't make decisions based on what one particular person said or this particular person said, because you really need to have an overview and a whole holistic understanding of where what your time horizon is, what your risk appetite is, which is going to be totally different to whatever that person on CNBC or Bloomberg is saying, right? Or, you know, they may have a different agenda. They may be talking up their book. They may be talking up their fund. So it's a very different, It's a very different mindset. So I would agree that it really is best to just think about yourself. I wouldn't say that you necessarily need to ignore everybody, but I'd say just try and tune out the short-term noise that you hear a lot with the headlines and the news. And everyone, yes, you know, last year was saying, oh, all the big strategists on Wall Street were saying it's going to be a massive recession. It's coming. We're still not in a recession. And the S&P posted incredible double-digit gains last year. And who would have predicted that, right? So that's exactly a prime example of understanding that the market moves in ways that no one can predict. And so looking out and forecasting, just like you forecast a football game or you forecast the result of whatever match, you're not going to know. It's all really an educated guess in that sense. And for investors that have a plan and that have the discipline, it's really just about sticking to that plan and not being distracted, not moving away from that plan, not deviating from that plan because of what person A, B, C said about the next 3 months or what's going to happen to the oil price in the summer. All these things, they won't matter into your portfolio over the long term.
I play this game. I won't mention the name of the brands of the TV stations, but, you know, I watch some of the channels. And then and then I have my peanut ready going, okay, oh, here's where he starts making things up. You know, and it's become like 3 seconds to 2 seconds, the ones that over the years become shorter and shorter. You touched on a really important theme earlier on, and I think it's fundamental when we talk about whether or not we look at the stock market as a casino or for a long-term investment. What advice do you have for us when it comes to managing our greed? I mean, emotions when it comes to do with the stock market?
I'm a big fan personally of just dollar cost averaging, which is just taking the whole emotion out of investing for the market. So if you're thinking about dollar cost averaging, just putting it into an all world ETF or an S&P 500 ETF every month and having a set portion of that go towards your long-term investment portfolio. If you want to scratch that itch, if you have the need to say, I want to hunt a little bit on this stock, or I want to buy this stock, or I want to trade in this, I think really have a plan, a trading plan, understand how much money you can dedicate to that, really project it out. Don't be irresponsible. Don't take on leverage. I mean, that's the worst thing. If you're just taking on leverage completely, just irresponsibly and just leveraging up, that is what really gets people into trouble, especially when markets crumble. So I think that's an important thing to remember, is really just measure your risk and be responsible with the risk that you're taking. Not to say that I don't think you should go out and buy stocks and trade stocks if that's what you want to do, but I think really just understand the risk you're taking on, understand your position sizing. Don't be irresponsible and just trade without having any thought for long-term holdings, because at the end of the day, everyone's going to be invested for the long term. We've seen that with pension plans. You're not going to get these gold-plated pension plans anymore. We're all on DC plans now. We're all on CPF or whatever it is. So you really need to make that money work for you. And the best way to do that over the long term is really to put that into the stock market over the long term. So I would say, measure your risk, understand your risk appetite. Do have a collection of stocks if you're going to have a stock portfolio. But I'd say have that as like a satellite and have your core as really the global ETFs and your global exposure to equities.
Yeah, and you can just go to Money FM's YouTube page and type in ETF Insights with Michelle Martin, and you'll hear me talking about ETF. Yeah, yeah, understanding why an ETF performs a certain way. And of course, you can go to timtalksmoney.com and find out everything about investing. We've got Tim Phillips with us, founder of the site. So Buffett says, you know, market participants today are neither more emotionally stable nor better taught than when he started his career. So we all want to be like Buffett. You know, we don't want to be... Since he's become successful, generations of people have wanted to ape him. What can we do, too, to seize the opportunity and find these undervalued stocks that Buffett's built his wealth on?
Well, I think the whole concept of growth and value is really a very much debated topic nowadays, right? I mean, what was value back then when he was investing and what value is today is very, very different. And do we measure value on a price-to-book ratio when there's so much intangible capital and intellectual property that isn't valued at book per se now? And all these metrics, it's really misleading to just say, oh, this stock has a price-to-book value of 0.5, so therefore I must buy it. As a lot of investors say, something can be cheap for a good reason, for a reason, right? And will it ever recover is anyone's guess. So I think his point about being better educated, I tend to agree. I don't think it's really about being better educated. It's more about having the mentality that he has, which is focusing on the business, focusing on whether that business is continuing to produce cash flows, whether it's continuing to produce free cash flow, whether it's growing, whether it has a high and rising return on invested capital, ROIC, and you know whether it's really making good use of its capital in terms of return on equity. And so all these types of metrics are going to be able to indicate to you whether a business has a sustainable business model that can continue to grow, has a market-leading position, all these things. And when it gets down to actually holding, which is what he's so good at because he's held for how many decades, 8 decades and counting, it's more about the psychology. So the longer I've been investing, the more I've realized it's really not so much about finding good companies, which there are many good companies. Mm. It's just more, do you sell out early? Are you selling out early? Are you trading it? And because there are so many instances where people have sold out early of really great businesses because they've made, I don't know, 50% or 80% or whatever it is, which is great. But if you had held that for, I don't know, 10 years, you'd probably be sitting on a 20 bagger or 30 bagger. And so that type of money is going to be more life-changing to you than, say, 70, 80%. And the natural inclination, which he's great at not doing, is to really water the weeds and cut the flowers, right? We tend to sell our winners really early. We tend to think, oh, this has gone up so much. It must mean revert. It must fall. So I'm going to sell it and take profit. And then we're seeing other stocks in our portfolio do poorly, and we're like, oh, let's add to that because I'm averaging down. And so that's the worst behavior that you can really elicit as an investor in individual stocks, because if you think about your winners, if you're understanding the business, usually a stock that has been winning for 3, 5, 10 years has been winning for a reason and continuing to do well for a reason, because the business must be growing its earnings. It must be growing its cash flows. It's probably, if it pays a dividend, growing that dividend. So there are all these reasons why stocks over the long term continue to rise, right? And if you're losing money on certain stocks, I think it's important that you realize you shouldn't be adding to those while taking profit on your winners, because that's really, it's anathema to what you should be really doing, which is adding to your winners over time. But we don't like to, because naturally our human instinct is like, oh, we bought it at, I don't know, $50 and now it's $120. I don't want to buy more of that. That just makes no sense to me. It's like, I'm going to be making my cost basis higher. So no, I don't want to do that. So I'm just going to leave it there. And then lo and behold, it's probably going to do even better later. So I think it's just natural human emotion in investing to not want to do that. You get anchored to your price. You don't want to add to it. And I would say really try and fight that urge, because if you understand the business, you're happy with it, it's done well, then there's no reason why you shouldn't be adding, as long as the valuation obviously isn't mental. Then it should be something you should be thinking about. So I think a lot of it comes down to psychology.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And what helps him, I think, is that he can resist the urge to sell because he's so modest. His relationship with money is interesting. He still lives in the same home he bought for $31,500 more than 60 years ago.
He has a love and passion for investing. That's what continues to drive him, which is great.
Yeah, and his top two investments, you know what they are?
What is it again?
His wedding rings.
His wedding rings. Ah, okay. Is that what he said?
Again, long-term view.
Good answer.
Thank you so much, Tim. This has been a fantastic show full of great insights. And if anybody wants to find out more about your work, they can head to timtalksmoney.com, right?
Yes. Please, and do please check me out on TikTok as well, Tim Talks Money SG.
We sure will.
Yeah, thank you. Tim. Thank you, Michelle.
Tim Phillips there, my guest today on Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.